Session number 14806, Eddie Murray, Reel 9.
Then I went to Tokatse.
You were Japanese?
Yes, Japanese troops.
Right, they'd already there. Yeah.
So I went to see Tokatse, and he gave me a permission to go out. To go out onto the town. We were going to stay there for 3 or 4 days. And I got permission to go out. And so he said, you know, be back by 9 o'clock or something like this, or even for the 6 o'clock soup. I said, well, I'll not need any soup. But come back 9 o'clock, otherwise you'd be posted deserted. So I said, that's all right. And I went straight to the British Embassy. See? And so Mr. Henderson was gone. It was Mr. Michael Reed. Now, Michael Reed has come into my story prior to that, because on a certain occasion he'd sent to the British government the fact that the local people in Indochina and in, you know, in that particular area in the Far East were all in favour of Allied troops coming there, but no notice was taken of it apparently. Mm. And so Michael Reed was the acting consul general, which was not an embassy.
And it was occupied by the Japs.
No. Get to it in a minute.
Okay.
Get to it in a minute. And so, you know, I said to Michael Reed, you know, I'd like to get away from the Legion, although I'm quite happy there and all the rest of it. Now he said, Mr. Murray, he said, quite impossible. He said, there are 50,000 Japanese in and around Saigon by kind permission of Vichy France. The Japanese apparently had asked for airfields and port facilities in Indochina, and Vichy France had accorded them these facilities. And so there were 50,000 Japanese troops in southern Indochina and another 50,000 in Haiphong once I got up there and in the Haiphong area. So there were at least 100,000 Japanese troops in Indochina at that particular time. And so Michael Reed said, you know, the only thing I can do is to offer you some whiskey. And there were friends there, and he, you know, visited us to the place, and we played bridge practically all night and drank quite a bit of scotch. And I went and did the wall. I got over the wall into the barracks and back into my company, my Legion. You see, nobody had been asking questions. Tokatse hadn't been asking questions at all to find out if I was back. I think several people had been given permission to go out, as a matter of fact, because it was French territory, do you see, and
but how were the were the Japanese on the streets there?
They were on the streets in patrols, a patrol of perhaps a dozen Japanese, with an officer and an NCO were patrolling the streets of Saigon, but the majority of them, of course, were in and around the port of Saigon.
Right.
And so Michael Reed said, it would be quite impossible for me to get you onto a boat, however much I would wish to do so. But he said, because of the presence of the Japanese and their searches of every ship that's in the port of Saigon.
And who was actually running the place, the Japs or the Vichy French?
Well, no. There was a French administration there. But, of course, it was not a happy mixture, because the French administration, although they were carrying out the majority of the Vichy orders, the man in command, Dicou, at that time, was it Dicou? The French Governor General at the time was definitely pro de Gaulle rather than pro Vichy. But he felt it incumbent upon him to carry out certain orders that Vichy France sent to him. And one of them, of course, was the presence of the Japanese troops, which he couldn't, you know, he could do nothing against.
Were the Japanese, the patrols they had, what was their function?
Acte de présence, to show that they were there, showing the flag, if you like.
Would they have had any...
But then, of course, their troops were allowed to circulate. And of course, so there were police patrol to see that none of their troops were getting into trouble.
Right, so it was a shore patrol.
A shore patrol.
Or military police patrol as well. And did the Japs... in your view, did they have control over French? And if they saw a Frenchman walking down the street they didn't like the look of, would they have had a go at him?
No. There were, at that time, at that particular time, they were very, very much there in an insignificant role, just an act, as I said, you know, just a presence.
And if they saw a Vietnamese walking down the road, they didn't like the look of.
Well, again, you know, I didn't spend too much time in, in barracks, so I wouldn't know. But the feeling is that it would be exactly the same as it was in Hanoi and in Tong, in northern Indochina, you see, that they patrolled, but they took no active steps against any of the residents.
Okay, right.
Unless they would attack themselves.
Okay, yes. How long were you actually in Saigon?
3 days.
3 days only, yeah. Okay. And what did you do after that? You were in one of the French barracks there.
Yes, in one of the... Yes.
Yeah. What was the atmosphere in the town? Like, you were walking through the town or whatever?
It was very, very unsteady. It was... People didn't know what was going to happen next, do you see? Mm. And they could see that they were far, far away from France. Mm. And that even in those days, of course, there was the murmur of the Viet Minh. Yes, communists. They were definitely communists.
Yeah.
But we called them Viets. Wanting their independence, you see.
The territory was it called Vietnam or just French Indochina then?
That was French Indochina, Indochina.
Did the name Vietnam actually...
No, it came much later, much later.
Yes.
Not before 52, I would have
thought. Right, yes. Mm. And, but I mean, people were still, you know, there, terrace restaurants and all the pavement cafes, all the rest.
Yes, everything was there. Right. It was colonial life.
Mm, petrol they had, or...?
Yes, it was restricted.
So they got it.
But, you know, everybody had it.
Right.
But the majority of the population of Saigon, the Indochinese population and European population, of course, were on bicycles.
Mm. Right. So after Saigon?
After Saigon, up through the south, back onto the boat, and up through the South China Seas to Haiphong.
The port of Hanoi. And
there again, of course, the Japanese presence was definite. Mm. One could see them patrolling in the port of Haiphong on the quayside and all that sort of thing, but we didn't stay there.
Mm.
We immediately entrained for Viet Ri. But along the roads and the rail tracks and all that sort of thing, one could see the Japanese military.
Were there Japanese Navy ships in Haiphong?
Didn't see any.
No.
Didn't see any at all. They probably were. Didn't see any.
Were they half controlling the harbour, did you have? I mean, how did that work? You couldn't say, I
suppose. Well, apparently they had powers of search.
Right.
Or they took powers of search, whether they had them or not.
Right.
You see, because the French population didn't want a conflagration at that particular moment.
No.
You see?
So did you spend any time ashore in Haiphong?
No.
Straight onto a train.
Marched straight from the port onto the train, because the train was there practically alongside, right down to the quayside.
Gare Maritime.
Gare Maritime.
Right.
Yeah.
It must have been hot and all the rest of it, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. We were wearing topies at the time.
Really?
Mm. And the light khaki.
Mm.
But
and
it was
very
uncomfortable.
Had you been armed?
No rifles or anything.
No. And you went to, you got on the train, and you went to where did you go?
Viet Ri.
I don't know.
Viet Ri. Yeah. It's the junction of the Black and the Red Rivers.
Okay. So
and I think the Clear River. Black and the Clear River.
And that's inland?
Yes. I think 60, 70 miles.
So 70 miles west of Hanoi, Haiphong.
West of Haiphong.
Yeah, okay.
And about 15 miles from Hanoi.
Okay, right. And so...
Or maybe, 20 miles from Hanoi.
20 miles north of Hanoi, is it? Or
no, east.
20 miles east of Hanoi, okay. And what sort of an area? Did you stay there long? Or?
It's delta, of course. It's delta.
Delta area.
It's very, very low-lying.
Mm.
And
Paddy fields.
All over the place, paddy fields, with just ridges between the paddy fields to walk along.
Mm.
And frequent shrines, know, native shrines, because the Indo-Chinese, you know, be they Christian or what have you, they still worshipped to a certain amount their ancestors.
Yes, that's
you know, the hero worship, really, ancestor worship, rather than not really a religion, but a it was a refinement, really.
Custom superstition,
They paid respects to their ancestors.
How long did you spend in Viet Ri?
Now, that was 41. Now I think it was probably about May, and then 42. 18 months.
18 months, right. And so you're in a barracks, was it? Or
yes.
Yeah.
In a barracks. And two floors of barracks.
Okay. And was it... it's a town, or what's it?
Viet Ri is a small town.
But it's is it like a bit? Is it a bit like sort of Aldershot or Sidi Bel Abbes? I mean, is it the or Leopoldsburg or what's its function? Is it a military town or a military?
First and foremost, of course, it was military. There's no doubt about that. But not only that, it's a very important centre because the railway goes there, first of all.
So it's a railway junction.
And also there are three rivers close by.
Right. And there are bridges over those rivers.
There are bridges, yes.
Rail bridges.
Rail bridges.
Rail bridges. And
rail, yes.
Any factories or? No.
I've got a feeling there were factories.
Yeah, but that was its prime importance.
Making ropes, I think, if I remember
right. Right. But the main importance was that it was a junction town.
Yes, a junction town. And then just a couple of miles down the road was another large village, Sontai, which was more commercial. Viet Ri was military.
Right.
And Sontai, of course, being right on the river, at the river junction, was... much more commercialized than Viet Ri. Navigable only by small boats.
All right. Okay. And what had happened to these Indo-Chinese troops who were there?
Ah, no, they'd remained in. We didn't see any more of them. There were certain those sections, of course, that had come from the Haiphong area in northern Tonkin were still on board.
What was the? You said there'd been a previous unit that had travelled out at Dakar.
Yes.
And they weren't allowed because of their activities. They weren't or misbehaviour. Weren't allowed ashore. What happened to them? Where had they gone? They'd gone to Indochina.
They'd gone to the 5th Regiment as well. Indochina. Yes.
Oh, so they're okay.
They were the previous detachment.
So you were the second draft.
I've never been able to work it out, as a matter of fact, whether they were the ones that came into Indochina after us, or was it just the mayor of the town that just didn't want troops there? And it might not have been a Legion troop, as a matter of fact.
All right. But I mean, this was your first opportunity to go abroad, wasn't it, apart from Narvik?
Yes. Yes, yes. So
you put your name down to it. That must have been the first Legion draft.
I'm sure that was the first Legion draft. And the others must have been colonial troops that had caused the trouble, because they were also, I mean, they were as liable as the Legion to run amok. Yeah.
Okay.
So here we are in Viet Ri.
Yeah, I was going to ask you you've answered the question. It was the 5th Regiment. And what were your was it quite like Sidi Bel Abbes?
Absolutely, yes.
It was the. What was the Legion headquarters in Indochina or in that part of Indochina?
Northern Indochina.
It was Viet Ri.
It was Viet Ri.
Viet Ri, right.
And that was for the whole of Indochina, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes,
indeed. So it was the order.
Although there were detachments that were sent down to Saigon,
right.
And then detachments also. Out to Cao Bang on the coast, and then out towards Laos, which was a French possession then, you see. And there had been trouble between Thailand and France and Siam and France, do you see, about the positioning of the frontier. And that was why the Siamese apparently had called in the Japanese as well to assist them. And so there was a Japanese presence out there as well. But and the Legion had in 19... just shortly before we arrived out there, as a matter of fact, the Legion had still been having battles against the Siamese and the Japanese help that they had on the Indo-Chinese frontier with Siam.
Whose side were the Japs on at that
point? Oh, the Siamese.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Right, Viet Rhea, what sort of a town was it?
A very, very small, the barracks was Viet Rhea, really. And there were a few officers' houses and a few civilian residents and that sort of thing, but not many. The main civilian population was downhill at Son Tai.
How far was that?
A matter of 2 or 3 miles.
2 or 3 miles. And when had this been built? What sort of a place was it? Quite old, or?
Oh dear, I could have found that out, I suppose.
Oh, okay, but what I was saying is, was it?
It wasn't. I mean, it was. I'm sure it was 100 years old.
Really?
I'm sure
stone
it was 100
built
years.
Or?
It was stone, and with balconies all round every place, and the offices were across on the right-hand side, and the barracks, the where the soldiers were, was on the left-hand side. Before that, just outside, was much more recent Naffy, with a big lake, quite a big lake, in which big carp, could be fished, you see. But the carp, and once a year, or maybe every 6 months, the legionnaires had a sort of a group detailed to drag nets through this lake to catch the fish, do you see. And then that was used in the what they call the ordinaire, the kitchen.
Yes.
In the kitchens.
Yes.
Muddy, of course, it was because it was there was no stream or anything like that running into it.
Yes. It was semi-stagnant.
Yes. But they used it for swimming. Then we had a place down at Son Tai, which we also used for swimming.
How many people were there in the barracks? I mean, what size of a barracks was it? A battalion or?
Now, on the right-hand side were all the officers, nearly all the officers.
A few thousand or 5,000 or?
And the 5th Regiment. So that meant I was think about probably 500 or 600.
Okay. Viet Rhea was for 500 or 600 in total.
Because this is the headquarters, and there were also detachments, do you see, companies out at Hajiang, at Bavi, and Hajiang was the prison centre, like Colombo-Shahr in the Sahara, do you see. So it was rather tough there. They had a small detachment there, just a section. And then there was a section at Langson, that was a murderized section right on the Chinese frontier, and Hajiang. And now, where was Jean? Jean was the 3rd Battalion. See, there were three battalions. The first was at Viet Rhea. The second was at Tong. No, the first was at Kim Dai, where the airfield was. The second was at Tong. And the third was at... There's a million at another place.
Okay.
Anyhow. So there were three battalions.
Right. And what were your duties there, or the role of the unit? Okay, we're finishing off now. Shall we finish it then and go off and have... We've got to the stage where you're in Indochina and you're in Viet Rhea, which is the headquarters more or less of the Legion in all of Indochina. And it's a camp of for up to about 500 people, 600 people. That's be a lieutenant colonel, colonel's command, something like regimental?
Colonel command, lieutenant colonel or colonel.
a regimental headquarters. Is it hilly or flat, or what's it like?
No, it's very, very flat country.
Very flat.
You have to go, you know, maybe 12 to 15 miles before you reach the mountainous country.
Okay. And was there a town attached, as there was in Sidi Bel Abbès, with, you know, bars and
No, there wasn't a town as such in Vietri, but the town was actually down in Sontay, which was at the junction of the rivers, as I mentioned before. The Vietri, of course, as I said, about 500 people. The regiment, 5th Regiment, was divided into three battalions. The 2nd Battalion was at Tong, and the 3rd Battalion at Yen Bay. So the 1st Battalion at a place called Kim Day, which is very, very close to Tong, and the 2nd Battalion. So actually there was only the regimental headquarters and all the administrative stuff at Viet Tri. So it was a point of, you know, much importance. The most important thing is that it was, I think, was that it was on the railway from Haiphong to Hanoi. When I first went there, I was there for about 18 months. When I first went there, I was again pushed into a job, a coveted job, or one of the coveted jobs, in the Bureau of Material, it's called. And I had to keep records of every bit of material, including arms and ammunition and cavalry stuff, in each of the various battalions.
Okay, when you say cavalry stuff, they had a cavalry company?
No, but,
squadron?
All the officers had horses.
Ah.
See, and so, and of course there was the mules.
Oh, right.
The mules, you see, for carrying the heavy, the 81 mortars, even the 60 mortars, but also to carry the heavy machine guns that we had.
Those were Hotchkiss, I think you said.
Hotchkiss, yes.
Yeah. And they're the same caliber as the rifle. You've got heavier ones still, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, I'd like to be able to tell you. I've got a feeling they were 9mm as well.
Okay. And what the actual function of the regiment was to keep a presence in Indochina?
Yes. That was it. Of course, I mean, it was one of the French, it was a French possession, and so naturally they had to have an armed force there.
Were there any colonial infantry? What about the colonial infantry units?
Yes, there was. There was the RIC, that was the infantry, the colonial infantry. And there was also the artillery. Now, the infantry was the 9th Regiment, so there was a whole regiment, but they were scattered all over Indochina. Well, so was the Legion, really. But they had important posts, shall we say, in various places in the country. And the artillery, of course, were not such an important organization out there because of the difficulty of transporting out there the larger weaponry, if you like.
And what sort of people joined the colonial?
Well, the colonial were all French, of course, and they also had the, as we had in the Legion, as a matter of fact, each group or each section had a certain number of native troops, but the colonials had many more native troops than we had in the Legion.
So the native troops were organic to the colonial regiments and what have you?
Well, as I said...
They weren't separate?
No, they were not separate.
Okay.
And then, of course, they also had their native regiments.
Ah, yes.
Absolutely native, do you
see?
And they had NCOs. There was the occasional French officer with the native troops, but they were entirely separated from the rest of us.
Did they have... they had French officers or Indo-Chinese officers?
Occasionally. They had quite a number of French officers. But quite a lot of their, you know, them were also Indo-Chinese officers that had gone to military officer schools.
Yes.
But likewise, in the Legion, we had one or two officers, I can only remember one, as a matter of fact, Indo-Chinese officers.
Mm.
But he'd done the colonial, the officers' training school at Saint Cyr or Saint Maxon. And we had several, quite a number of Indo-Chinese officers, NCOs, right. Non-commissioned officers.
What sort of people joined the colonial infantry? And what attraction was there, the colonial troops?
Well, the colonial troops, the majority of them, of course, being French, were called up, had been called up.
Ah, right.
You see, and then they would have had to volunteer for service in Indochina.
Mm.
But likewise, there was a great French community in Indochina.
Yep.
And they also had children. They were in banks, do you see, managers of French banks or industries, firms and companies and all that sort of thing. And when they came to the age of 19 or whatever it was, then they were also called up into the army, do you see. And instead of going back to France to do their service, well, naturally they did their service in the colonial regiments that were there.
Mm. Well, the local colonial regiments, were they like something of the atmosphere of the Indian Army, or was it more of an anomalous thing where we do have regiments that come from Gibraltar, or half regiments or batteries that come from Malta and Gibraltar and sundry places, if I can put it like that?
I think we've got a little bit of a misunderstanding here. You're talking about the colonial regiments as being regiments raised in the colonies, whereas the colonial infantry is specifically, or the 9th Regiment, you see, was specifically a French unit.
Recruited in France for service.
Recruited in France for service overseas. The artillery.
Right.
But into these organizations, they also enlisted a certain number of native personnel who had expressed a wish to come into the French personnel, or who had possibly been living in France. You know, were Indo-Chinese living in France,
right,
and had volunteered to go to their native country.
Okay.
But also there were, in the Foreign Legion, a number of native personnel, mainly, they were competent to fill most of the roles, but I think that the majority of those that were in the Legion, or serving in the Legion, were what we call Métis. That is to say that they had a father who had been a Legionnaire before him, for instance.
Oh, I see.
You see? And so he had, and looked possibly European or Aryan, rather than native.
Métis?
Métis.
M-I-T.
Half caste.
Okay.
M-E-T-I-S-S-E.
Okay.
Mm. And so we also had natives, do you see, in half natives, half castes, in with the Legion. And as I said before, we had NCOs and officers who were of native origin.
Mm.
But there were also regiments, I don't know how many, regiments and companies raised in Indochina specifically for the Indochinese. And I suppose it is possible that they, being a French colony, had been called up, having attained the age of, what have you, 19 or 21, and had been called up to form these companies. And of course they went on, and some of the people that are the volunteers, or those that had been called up, stayed on in these regiments and got their living there.
So, to recap, you got colonial troops from mainland France.
Yes.
You'd got locally Indo-Chinese regiments, or whatever, French Indo-Chinese regiments locally raised. And as far as I can gather, they didn't have a tradition quite as the Indian Army had, perhaps.
Not really.
They're like levies in a way. And then you had the Legion, and to each of these,
and the artillery,
and the colonial artillery, and to each of these, you had attached a native component, if I can put it that way, of
if they were in the Legion or if they were in the colonials,
then they were not specifically
components. They were.
You said that he. Okay.
They were real troops. I mean, they were members of groups and members of sections.
Okay, they're individuals. They're individuals. Yeah. Okay. Individuals who are members of. I see. I misunderstood you. I thought perhaps you meant that there were sections of natives, for want of a better term, who were attached to the leadership.
No, I see.
Okay.